Hello, this is Paul Green, chairman of the City Club of Chicago and WGN political analyst. Today at the City Club, we had the second ward alderman, Brian Hopkins, who gave a deep discussion about the kinds of projects he thinks are needed in his ward, a ward which has gotten tremendous publicity lately because it's been called a lobster ward. It just sort of looks like a lobster as it stretches from the lakefront to almost the middle of the city. The most interesting part of the presentation was his idea that unless we improve the infrastructure and unless we do some of these corrections, we will not be growing as a city. And in fact, tourism, which is so important to us, will start diminishing. So many questions were asked about who's going to pay for it. And his answer was, we have to pay for it because the future of the city may be at stake.
Thank you so much, Jay and Professor Green, for that introduction. Am I being graded on this, Professor? You're taking copious notes over there. What an honor it is to be here and to have this moment at the City Club. Look out at a room full of people, nearly all of whom I have known for years, some more recently than others. But it really is kind of a snapshot of my life that led me to this moment and this podium. I've been out there more times than I could count. I've eaten a lot of Mastacholi. I've enjoyed all the remarks and the speeches and the policy debates and everything. But being in this room, in this spot, it's a totally different perspective. Looking out at the room full of opinion leaders, in the popular vernacular, we call you stakeholders. You are the stakeholders of Chicago. You are the people who are involved, engaged, committed to working in your communities, in your neighborhoods. And I can't tell you how much I value your presence here and how much I value the relationships that I've had with you all over the years. Some of you actually supported me in my campaign for alderman. Some of you didn't, and that's fine. I actually have some opponents here in the room today, one of them who is now on my staff. So you just never know how it's all going to work out. But this is just a moment I can't let go without reflecting a little bit on that. It's one of the things that I think led me to this point in my career. And if I've had any success at all in my first year in office, and by the way, today is my one-year anniversary as an alderman, exactly 1 year. From the date I took the oath of office, and, you know, so much has happened in that 1 year, and if I've had success, it's been because of the relationships that I've been able to forge over a lifetime of working in the city of Chicago. In addition to that, my staff. I have to give each member of my staff a shout-out. I'm going to try to limit the shout-outs because I could go through the whole room and turn my speech into nothing but an acknowledgement of my gratitude to everyone. But there are some people that absolutely must be mentioned because we've just had a great year in the new second ward. And if I look good, it's because of all the work that they've done, and they need to hear it again publicly. So Steve Nikotopoulos, please stand, Steve. Lisa Ryan. Lisa, where are you? In the back. Jose Rivera, who was graciously lent to me by Alderman Burke. Dean Argyris, who I inherited from Alderman Fioretti. Thanks, Dean, for sticking around. Christian Ficarra, who was with me from day one on my campaign. John Guillen, my former campaign manager, who is with me to this day. John. And also, he's been introduced once already, but I'm going to give him a second shout-out. In his other role, in addition to being a hospital CEO, he is the new committeeman of the second ward, Tim Egan. Tim, thanks for all your work. I have additional support from so many different circles, advisors, friends, colleagues, but a special shout-out goes to the Roosevelt Group for their technical advice and expertise. Victor Reyes, Mike Noonan, Jacob Bringer, and Amy Kirsten, thank you for everything you guys have done for me. Your work and your research has been invaluable. Thank you so much. So let's get to the substance. Since Jay already acknowledged my wife and mother, I'll just say hello to both of them once again, and thank you for all your support during the campaign, for being my rock. We do have some work to get to, so I will do that. So let's get this over with right away. For those of you that didn't get Professor Green's seafood reference, in addition to a year of public service, pothole requests, tree trimming, graffiti removal, budget debates, I've had a year of jokes about the damn lobster. Yes, my ward looks like a lobster. I get it. I'd like to take this moment to officially end the lobster joke. No more lobster joke. We're going to drop the lobster in a pot. We're going to seal the pot. We're going to boil the lobster. And I am never going to refer to the Second Ward as a lobster again. And the reason that I don't want to refer to the Second Ward as a lobster again is because, as you're about to see from my presentation, the Second Ward, despite its rather unique geography, is the best ward in the city of Chicago. And it gives me an opportunity that any one of my 49 colleagues in the city council would gladly trade places with me. I have an opportunity to reshape the very fabric of this city in two different locations in my ward, one on the east and one on the west. And we're going to start with the east. This is the Lakeshore Improvement Plan. This is something that I've been involved with for a number of years. It predates my candidacy as Second Ward Alderman. It goes back to the time that I spent on the board and as president of SOAR. This is a very bold, visionary project that has the chance to come to fruition. And we're promoting that right now. It includes most of my ward. The Second Ward in this map actually runs from about here to about here. So I've got almost all of this project area. I share it with Alderman Smith here and Alderman Riley here, so I'm going to need their help and cooperation to bring this about to reality, and I've talked to both of them. They're very interested in moving forward on this. As you can see, this is one of the most congested areas on the entire lakefront. Lakeshore Drive is a federal route. It's Route 41, as we all know, but the land under it is owned by IDOT, as Governor Quinn could tell you, and it's maintained by the city of Chicago. So there's three levels of government that are involved in it, but it's years beyond its service life. It's crumbling. The viaducts are falling apart. Occasionally they have to be closed due to concrete spalling, chunks of concrete land on cars. It needs to be rebuilt. Along with that, the lakeshore itself, the revetment, which keeps Lake Michigan from invading our city, also needs to be rebuilt. And we are now in the process of rebuilding 10 miles of that shoreline. It's divided up into 23 segments. So far, we've done 19. Can you guess which one we haven't done? Right here. Right in the heart of downtown. It remains to be completed. This is a $500 million project, partially federally funded, partially state funded. But we've saved the best for last, actually. This is the part of the lakefront that cries out for complete reconstruction. What you're looking at here is the intersection of Chicago Avenue and Lakeshore Drive. From a traffic engineering standpoint, this is an unholy creation that never should have been allowed to exist. If you propose this to a traffic design engineer today, they would throw you out of their office and say, this can't happen. It is a disaster. It is the cause of most of the congestion going all the way to Belmont in the morning on Lakeshore Drive. I won't get too technical, but what happens here is you can see the traffic that needs to turn from northbound Lakeshore Drive to go west onto Chicago Avenue. You have to have the cycle time to allow for at least 20 cars to make that turn. Otherwise, this part of Lakeshore Drive backs up. There isn't a sufficient turning lane. So having the cycle be that long stops the southbound traffic for an inordinate amount of time, and that creates the traffic jam every day that exists on Lakeshore Drive. So if we could fix this, we could increase the capacity of Lakeshore Drive dramatically and cut down on the number of rush hour delays. The other thing we need to concern ourselves with is the fact that Lake Michigan doesn't seem to want to stay where we would like it to be. This is a photograph from 2014. You can see the lake invading the roadway. We all remember Snowcopalypse from 2011. If that had been in the summer months instead of the winter, it would have looked a lot like this. The interesting thing about the 2011 storm, the lake was at historically low levels. It has risen almost 5 feet since then, and we're seeing dramatic fluctuations in the lake level over a shorter period of time due probably to climate change. Some of the scientists say that's what it is. And this constant raising and lowering of the lake level, you've got part of the revetment gets exposed to the elements, then it's covered by water again in the following years. It's crumbling at a much faster rate than anyone predicted. It is literally falling into Lake Michigan. In fact, the word revetment, it comes from a French word which means protective cloak or protective clothing. The revetment is designed to protect our city from Lake Michigan. It is failing, and it needs to be replaced. So this is what we're proposing. 70 acres of new parkland, a brand new Oak Street beach, You could see this barrier island. This was actually in Daniel Burnham's original plan for Chicago. So we're being true to his vision for the city. And this is 70 acres of parkland that doesn't exist today, which could be part of not only the buffer to protect the city from Lake Michigan, but to give us all great recreational opportunities that we don't have in what is really the busiest stretch of the Lakefront Trail, right here. This is the busiest stretch of the Lakefront Trail, and it's also the ugliest. There's no green at all. That's nothing but concrete there, crumbling concrete. So what we need to do is we need to fix that. It would look like this. Remarkable to actually create land where none existed before. Makes you feel pretty powerful when you think we have the ability to do that. Hello, Mr. Lucas, right? Can't find some land? Build your own. Nobody owns it, right? But actually what I'm proposing here really is nothing new. We've been doing this for years. Most of the lakefront as it exists today was built on lakefill. It's not that hard to do. We just did it at Fullerton Avenue. Walsh Construction put a couple of cofferdams out there and lined up the dump trucks and dumped fill into the lake and created 6 acres of parkland at Fullerton in Alderman Smith's district that didn't exist. And it's there now, and it's green, and it's beautiful, and there's trees and joggers and picnickers, and that was only $31 million. So what we're talking about here, obviously, it's a bigger scale. It's 70 acres. But the alternative is to allow Lake Michigan to eventually be at the doorsteps of all those high-rises on the Gold Coast, and I don't think that's a good plan either. Here's another view of it looking from the north. You know, this is a spectacular skyline that we have in the city of Chicago. It's postcard-worthy, and adding this to it, really, it's like a green welcome mat in front of the skyline. It just seems like it belongs there. This is the Chicago Avenue Exchange reimagined. It still allows for the connection between Chicago Avenue and Lakeshore Drive, which, by the way, we need. We have the hospital campus there. You've got Northwestern. You've got RIC. You've got Children's. You need emergency vehicle access from Lakeshore Drive, so we have to have that intersection there. But this is designed in such a way that won't cause the traffic jams that we see today. And, again, we've done this before. Roosevelt Road, Lakeshore Drive, the museum campus. We know how to do this. This is nothing new. It just needs to be done. It needs to be done now. So there's my first inspirational quote. I picked Johann Wolfgang von Goethe because there's a street by his name in my ward that the CTA bus drivers routinely mispronounce as Goethe, but it is Goethe. And I think he would appreciate being quoted today because I pronounced his name right, but also because his street a century ago was under Lake Michigan. It didn't exist. It's on landfill on the eastern part of the ward. So I think he would appreciate the proposal that I just offered. So that's the eastern part of the second ward. Tempted to say lobster claw, but I won't. Moving to the other side, on the western part of my ward, we have the North Branch Industrial Corridor. It's a planned manufacturing district in the second ward. I have several, actually. But the one in particular, PMD number one, the first one that was created, happens to be contained exclusively within the borders of my second ward. This once thriving area has suffered from industrial decline as we've lost industrial jobs over the years. It's poised now to be revived as the economic engine of the city once again. The corridor was first established in 1988, so it's been over 30 years now since this PMD was established. And it's time for a review. It's time for a comprehensive reconsideration of what that zoning designation does. I said it as a candidate, and I'm saying it now to be consistent. I believe it's time to remove the set of handcuffs that the industrial restriction imposes on this parcel of land and open it up to all possibilities. Let's start with a blank slate and see where we go from there. In order to do that, though, there's a couple of conditions that I have to impose before we can make any zoning changes. We have to address the existing infrastructure needs. We have to mitigate the anticipated challenges that will be caused by increased density and economic activity within the district. And we have to improve the quality of life for people who already live in the community. Community participation will be key to this process as we go forward. Looking to the future requires us to examine the resources that we already have in place. A quick glance confirms that the existing conditions must be changed. the infrastructure cannot accommodate the present uses, let alone whatever we might bring in the future. And what you're looking at is a plat of survey from around the time of the Great Chicago Fire. As you can see, the river is an impediment to east-west corridors. So you have oftentimes streets that would be an arterial street, they dead-end it at the river. The explosive growth of the residential population in Lincoln Park and Lakeview has increased the number of car trips from the east to the Kennedy Expressway. Those are very desirable neighborhoods to live in, and people choose to live there. But for some commuters in the morning, especially those who do the reverse commute, as my wife Colleen does, it can take longer to get to the Kennedy Expressway from their home than it does to get to their job on the Kennedy Expressway. In 2015, the North Avenue Bridge had over 31,000 trips a day. This is the Cortlandt Street Bridge. We missed it terribly last year when it was under construction. Anyone who lives in the neighborhood can tell you the impact that taking that bridge out of service had on the community. It was one very important link over the Chicago River that wasn't available while we performed the needed repairs. It has over 10,000 trips per day. Those 10,000 people didn't stop going to work. They just flooded onto North Avenue and occasionally Fullerton. The Cortlandt Avenue Bridge, although we did rebuild it, we didn't redesign it. It still has the same capacity that it had when it was built in 1902, and that's what it was built to carry in 1902. I think it's time for an update and an upgrade. Or we'll wind up what Yogi Berra predicted for the retail section around Clybourne. The area around North and Clybourne is a destination shopping center for at least four square blocks. The traffic in that area is completely unworkable. Other elements in the corridor are not properly integrated. For example, the Metro station. It does feature bike parking, and that's great. As a cyclist, I appreciate that. But it still stands mostly in isolation from the neighborhood that surrounds it. Compared to other Metro stations, it's underutilized, and I would argue that's because it's a rather unwelcoming place. It has potential for so much more, and if we're going to continue to build in this neighborhood, that Metro station needs to realize its potential. My support for changing the PMD will require the city, the community, and private developers to work together. I mentioned the role of the community in making this plan because the changes will affect people who already live in the corridor and for the rest of Chicagoans who have to travel through the corridor. We all have to have a say in this process going forward, as Broadway star Alexander Hamilton would tell you. If you're not part of it, you're not going to appreciate the end result. So, in that spirit, I had a meeting at DePaul University in conjunction with the graduate program in urban studies there. We had about the same number of people that came today. We had about 300 residents of the community show up to discuss their concerns, their needs, their vision for the neighborhood. We did a design charrette, thanks to the graduate students at DePaul who helped us with that. And some very valid and very good suggestions came out of that, which we are taking into consideration right now. We also sent out a survey recently to Second Ward residents to solicit opinions for those who weren't at the design charrette and to get some more specific thoughts about what we need to do. And the results of the survey, in some instances, are rather predictable. Traffic congestion, it's kind of off the charts. That's the number one concern that people talk about. It gives me, as the alderman, kind of a roadmap for how to get buy-in to whatever redevelopment we eventually propose. If I can show that the redevelopment will help us solve our traffic congestion problem rather than contribute to it, people are going to embrace whatever redevelopment possibilities we start talking about for the PMD site. The community is demanding that these proposals include traffic mitigation measures, as you can see there. The Second Ward, I'm fortunate to have so many people who are active, engaged citizens with some expertise. I have architects, I have attorneys, I have engineers, I have people who volunteer their time because they care about their neighborhood, but they also have the experience to really bring something to the table. Many of them were at the design charrette, many of them responded to the mail and email survey that I recently did. And as you can see, again, the results were somewhat predictable, although when the issue of tax increment financing came up, I was a little surprised by that. TIF is almost a third rail right now. It's something that people are afraid to talk about. But what I found was that my residents understand that it's simply a financing tool. And if you use this tool, to help solve the infrastructure problems, then it's probably a good tool. If you use it to, you know, enrich somebody that's in a development where they don't necessarily need any subsidies, that's a bad tool. So there's nothing inherently evil or bad about TIFs. It could be used for good purposes or bad purposes. And the survey response was clear that people in the Second Ward believe that. More importantly, redevelopment must improve the lives of people who live near the corridor. We have an opportunity to focus development on the human experience, to focus on how people will interact with their environments, how they interact with each other. Our community is calling for development that anticipates the needs of the next generation of people, not just for the next generation of American entrepreneurship. So we must focus on the human experience rather than particular individual business interests or sectors. Focusing on the human experience means we should not expect to simply transition from manufacturing to technology. At first, that seems like a compelling idea, a few flicks of the pen, and we change the ordinance from manufacturing to technology. Many exciting developments around the country are built on a thriving tech industry. Here in Chicago, of course, we do have the 1871 Startup Incubator. We have Google's headquarters in the thriving Fulton Market District. We have the Digital Manufacturing and Design Institute on Goose Island. So there's many examples of what we can do going forward, but we can't rely solely on one industry to redevelop this area for us. This is an example of what happened recently in Washington, D.C., and there's some strong parallels to what we're about to do in Chicago. This is the Capitol Riverfront Project in Southwest Washington, D.C. This project, like ours, focuses on water. You could see the blue structures were all part of this redevelopment. It's roughly the same size as the Finkel site in Chicago. We need to create opportunities to expand recreational use. We could establish an area where boaters could park, a river walk, and a corridor where people can transport themselves from the new neighborhood to the job center. Not everybody who lives there is going to work there. Many will continue to work downtown, and the river could be a transit corridor for them as well. In Washington, D.C., the federal government was involved in this. They created an employment center. Many federal employees live there to this day. None of this would have happened if the water wasn't clean. And they took some steps in Washington, D.C. to clean up the water, just as we're doing here in Chicago today. In March, the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District announced that it will introduce ultraviolet radiation to disinfect water as part of the final layer of its treatment process. The disinfection reduces the risk of health problems that could result from direct contact with the water that pours into the river from our combined sewer system. Today, the river is much safer for boating, and clean water makes the river even more compelling for recreation, to live alongside of it, even to fish. And for that, we have the Board of the Water Reclamation District to thank, and I want to pay a special shout-out to Commissioner Deborah Shore, who was the first candidate for water reclamation to run on that platform. It had been discussed for years, and we were told disinfection was impossible. A majority of the existing board, when Commissioner Shore first ran for that office, I believe was opposed to the idea. So single-handedly, I'll give you the credit, Deb, over time, she persisted. And her vision prevailed. And her vision prevailed not only because of her tenacity, but because it's the right thing to do. Clean water is better than dirty water. It's pretty easy to say that, right? But Deb Shore had to overcome some resistance to that. And speaking of, I just had to throw that out there, too. I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so, right? If he were here today, that was his vision back in 1970, Mayor Richard J. Daley. He was right, but he was mocked for that. People made fun of him. This quote is remembered throughout history because people thought it was a ridiculous thing to say. Not only was it not ridiculous, it was a harbinger of the future, and we're here today to give him some credit for back in 1970 realizing the importance of cleaning up our waterways. Workers have to be able to get in and out of our new employment center without delays. Commuters who live east and west of the district must be able to rely on east-west corridors without wasting precious hours stuck in traffic. New regulations should promote the use of public transit, van pooling, telecommuting, and flexible work schedules. Work and live spaces should be allowed to develop together so workers can share the ride. Traffic plans for the PMD must align with surrounding plans for the neighborhood. redevelopment must create connections between the neighborhoods to the east and west, north and south. These connections can only be established by construction of a new infrastructure. We're going to need a new bridge. I think that's a foregone conclusion. The cost estimate for that is anywhere from $10 to $20 million, but the cost estimate for the amount of congestion, frustration, and being stuck in traffic, I'm sure, exceeds that dramatically. The Urban Land Institute has recently focused on trail-oriented development, another type of TOD, the latest phase in the evolution of change from a car-centric to a human-centric design. Since we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to affect the inter-property coordination of these parcels, we need to establish a new trail system as well as enhance the existing trail system. And what you're looking at here is some snapshots of the 606, which is wildly successful. There's only one thing preventing the 606 trail from becoming a commuter superhighway that would serve up to 300,000 Chicago residents who live in the neighborhoods along that three-mile trail. All we have to do is fill in the missing link that is caused by the existence of the Kennedy and the Chicago River. If we can connect the existing 606 trail to the other side of the river, it opens up a whole new world of possibilities for bike commuters. And we're very excited about the possibility of doing that. That's all we have to do. Span two current obstructions, and you've got something really powerful here. This is an existing bridge, actually. If I go back where you see the arrow going over the Chicago River, the bridge currently exists that could be used for the 606 trail. It goes by the very indistinct name of Bridge Z6. That's why they called it Z6 back in 1899, I think, when it was first constructed. It is the only bridge of its kind in the United States of America. It's called a bobtail swing bridge. Other bridges like that have a pier in the center of the waterway that it spans, so it could swing back and forth. This one, because it's at a bend in the Chicago River, they couldn't put a support in the middle of the river. So the entire bridge exists on the east bank of the river. And when a train comes, the whole thing swings out over the river, and that's how the train crosses. And it's been in continuous operation since 1899. There really isn't freight service that's used on there so much anymore, but since the bridge still exists, it could actually become a tourist attraction. People in the bridge community, bridge fans, and actually there are such a thing. I was on Chicago Tonight last week, and the guest that went on after me, I was talking to him in the green room, he's a bridge fan, and he wrote a book about bridges, and they go to conferences where they talk about bridges, and they like bridges. And everyone in America in that community knows about Bridge Z6. If we were to adapt that into a bike trail bridge, it would actually be a tourist attraction. And since it was built in 1899, I think it's probably worth saving. Another great idea, this came from Carnegie Mellon University near Pittsburgh. It's an experiment that they used to control red and green light signals using smart technology, artificial intelligence, predictive algorithms. What they can actually do is predict where traffic jams are going to occur, change the light cycles in real time accordingly, and actually prevent the traffic jam from happening. It's an amazing technology. It's working well. So far, the initial study has concluded that it reduces travel time by 40%, and it reduces wait times at the light by 26%, reduces the number of times that you get stopped by a light by 31%, and it costs $20 million for the entire area. If we implemented this technology in the entire PMD, all the traffic lights, that's the estimate for what it would cost. Again, when you put it that way, I think it's eminently affordable, and I support bringing it to Chicago. In the 90s, the city of Chicago vacated Armitage Avenue near the river. They also vacated Kingsbury and Southport. I think it might be time to revisit that decision. We could return those roadways to service. We could look at additional entrances and exits from the Kennedy. There's a variety of things that need to happen in that area to help the residents get to the Kennedy right now. You knew this was coming, didn't you? I'm not going to say it because it's overused, but I will say when I talk about these things, I feel my own blood stir, and I hope you do too. One of the questions that I've been asked frequently in the last year is, it's sort of a variation of, you know, do you regret running for office? What's it like? And it's usually in the context of all of the very real problems that we have to deal with right now. They were dropped in my lap a year ago. I acknowledge that. And they defy easy solutions. And sometimes, my wife will tell you, they keep me up at night. So I'm asked, you know, do I regret it? And the answer is absolutely not. And this is the reason, you know. We're trying to solve the problems. You know, we have social unrest in the city. We have a school system teetering on insolvency. We have a budget deficit. We have pension funds going bankrupt. There's no easy answers for any of this. But sometimes we get so caught up in putting out the small forest fires, we forget to plant a tree. Here's some trees we can plant. This will change the entire character of the city. It'll bring jobs to the city. It'll increase the property tax base, which helps us pay for some of the things that we need to pay for. People will move to the city. People will stay in the city to raise their families rather than go to the suburbs. All of the answers that we seek are here, are represented by this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that we have to reshape the fabric of our urban environment. I am so privileged to be a part of this experience right now and to present ideas like this to a group of people like yourselves, and hope that at the end you'll agree with me that the cost of inaction is far more than the cost of inaction, and let's move this thing forward. Thank you very much.
I taught him everything except the jokes. By the way, the professor has to say, you only had half the quote on Richard J. Daley. Not only you could fish in the river, but there would be barbecue pits along the river where you can cook your fish and eat lunch. Any old-timers here will admit that? Jack, thanks. Okay, here we go. Sorry. Our group is getting smaller. All right, here we go. Leslie Wilson. Great speech. Question that about it. Today we learned of more cuts to CPS. Our hearts bleed. How can knowledgeable ward members volunteer to help you mobilize efforts for constructive, positive, independent change in our schools? Children are our future. Always good to start off with a soft.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm doing what I can. The average property tax bill for a parcel of land in the PMD right now, about $30,000 a year. What we're talking about could bring that up to $300,000 a year and more for the same exact parcel. Multiply that by, you know, the 40 acres that we're seeking to redevelop right now. A lot of that money is going to go to the schools. That's what it should be going to. So that's a big part of the solution. You know, we can't talk enough about it. My mother-in-law is here. You were introduced to Kathy Kula. She's a teacher at a Chicago public school. So I hear about this from both ends. I hear it from my colleagues at work, and I hear it from my mother-in-law. I recognize what's at stake right now. There probably isn't a more pressing crisis right now than what we have to do to make sure that people feel comfortable with their children in the Chicago public school system. I want to send my child to the Chicago public schools, and I want them to be safe. I want them to have everything that he needs to get a good education. I feel the pressure, you know. We have to get this right. And as I said earlier, you know, we're seeing people making the choice to stay in Chicago and raise their family. That was unheard of just a generation ago. You know, you'd have your fun. You'd live in Wrigleyville a couple years after college. You get married. You have a kid. The minute that they're school age, you flee to the suburbs. Everybody did that. Everybody doesn't do that anymore. But I don't want to return to those days. And unless we fix the school system, we are going to return to those days.
Okay. We got a lot of questions. Some are readable, some are can't read. Okay. Courtney, is that Thompson? Please explain Airbnb. You know, this is, you're in the city club now. Nothing's off the table. Issue and how it affects current condo rules and who trumps whom. All right, we got it. I like your verb, trumps. Go ahead.
You know, the last time I heard my name mentioned at this podium was a few months ago, and it was Rich Miller who was here, and he told everybody that he was my college roommate. So in the context of Airbnb, I want to tell you the true story behind that. I came home from class one day at the beginning of the semester, went into my dorm, and Rich Miller was asleep on my sofa. I don't know how he got there. I don't know who let him in. All I know is that at the end of the semester and finals rolled around, he was still there. We couldn't get rid of him. So to the 200 protesters demanding Airbnb rights at the city today, I would say, be careful who you let on your sofa. It's not as easy as you think it might be. But seriously, we're talking about largely a zoning issue when you're talking about Airbnb. There's really no difference between using your home for business purposes, if your business happens to be the hotel business, than using your home for business purposes to put a barber shop in your living room, or a nail salon, or a tattoo parlor, or a car repair shop in your garage. All those things people have wanted to do in the neighborhoods for years. They ask us all the time. They come to the city and say, can I get a license for this? No, you can't. And the reason you can't is because your neighbors will get very angry. They don't want a business next door to them and a residential street. The same thing applies in a high-rise building. Someone who's lived in high-rise buildings for a long time now, I want to know my neighbors, that's nice, but I don't want my floor to be turned into a hotel, and I don't want to have to see strangers that I don't know every day with luggage. I don't want to share the pool. I don't want to share the fitness center. I don't want to share the amenities of the building with somebody that I don't know so my neighbor can make money running their business. That's not right, and people don't want that to happen. So Airbnb is very similar in technology to Uber. It's given people this powerful tool to do something that they really couldn't do quite so easily just a few short years ago. It is a problem that requires regulation. It's not something we're going to be able to outlaw. People want to do it under certain circumstances. They should be able to do it. But we have to regulate it, and we have to have the means as a city to tell certain people in certain areas it's not allowed and you can't do it.
There you go. By the way, as an aside, you can imagine the pressure this kid's under, still a kid. Rich Miller was his friend in college. I was his professor. It's truly amazing. Okay. Sandra Geringer, NDA, which stands for? Correct. This is becoming acronym city. Who will pay for the Lakeshore Drive changes, and how much?
How much? The answer is a lot. We don't know yet. But as I mentioned, there's currently a $500 million project going on that includes revetment improvements, it includes shoreline improvements, includes part of Lakeshore Drive, not all of it. That's about $500 million, and the source of funding is the Army Corps of Engineers. They have exclusive control over the revetment. We have federal funding. Park District funding is involved because that land that we create becomes property of the Chicago Park District, and the state and city are involved in funding there too. So it is such a big-ticket item. You have to have a mix of funding sources. They all have to be involved. That's what makes this so difficult to put together, why I'm advocating it now in a room full of people. And by the way, the committee that I mentioned, many of them are here. I'll give some of them a shout-out. Howard, are you here? Howard Melton, our committee chairman. And Rick Roman, my good friend and colleague, who lets me look at my ward from the 95th floor of his restaurant very often. Mike Loganbill is here. Gail Spreen is also involved in it. Tom Murphy was supposed to be here. He couldn't be here. And also Mike Toulis from VOA Architects, who've done a tremendous amount of work in putting this together. We've been pushing this for a long time. The more we can create support for this, the easier it's going to be to eventually get the funding from those multiple sources that we need it from. But it will have a big price tag, and we can't let that scare us off.
Okay. We got two or three more questions, quick answers. We have one from Mark Weiermuller, who is, as you well know, many of you know Mark. He's a leading Bernie Sanders advocate. Mark is to the right of anybody in this room, perhaps the city. These are six... Excuse me, take two. There are 6,000 less kids in Chicago public schools this year. People are leaving Chicago, perhaps because of massive property taxes. How can we cut taxes? 25 words, you should do it.
I know. We have a revenue problem and we have a spending problem. The argument between the two of them is over, okay? It's both, actually. I did vote against the mayor's property tax increase, even though I thought that his intention to spend the money was good. I couldn't argue with, you know, what we needed to do to get ourselves out of the pension mess. But I had to speak up for the residents of my ward. We have the second highest assessed property valuation in total of any ward in the city. So a property tax increase falls disproportionately on my residents. My residents tell me they've had enough. I get that. I had to be their voice in the city council. It doesn't mean we don't need revenue. Again, going back to the redevelopment proposal, especially the Finkel site, that will bring in money to the city. That will bring in jobs to the city. There's been a tremendous amount of interest in corporate headquarter relocation. It wouldn't be proper for me to mention the names because they're rumored at this point, and that isn't fair to them, but I will tell you that there's some substance behind the rumors. They're names that you would recognize if I told you who was interested in putting their beautiful corporate headquarters along a river with a Riverwalk Park, with access to the metro station three blocks away, access to the CTA Brown Line station three blocks away, access to the Kennedy Expressway and O'Hare Airport just a stone's throw away. There is so much interest in bringing corporate headquarters to that spot that would bring jobs and revenue to the city. We can at least partially grow our way out of this problem. I would rather focus my efforts on that than having to go back to the Second Ward taxpayers and tell them that they're going to have to pay more again next year.
All right. Mayor Peterson wants to know how many fish did you catch this weekend? To be announced. Patricia, is there Patricia Ducant? Let me say, in the history of writing, you have one of the great slants of all time. I'm trying to read it. Why don't you speak your question? Because we.
Yeah, I will repeat the question. Yeah. I live on Michigan Avenue, Michigan and Chicago, and Patricia Ducanto, who's also very familiar and has strong ties to that building, just mentioned the fact that noise is such an issue for us, those of us who live downtown. Absolutely right. We've got a couple of things going. We've got some state legislation we're proposing to crack down on the loud motorcycles, which is a problem. I can tell you, as someone who owned a motorcycle for 20 years, I've spent many happy hours riding on my motorcycle. Not once did I ever think to myself, this would be so much more fun if I was making a lot more noise. You don't need to do that. It is not necessary. Motorcycles are manufactured to noise specifications. Every time you hear a motorcycle that's too loud, you can guarantee one thing. The owner of that motorcycle had it illegally modified in order to make that noise. They don't come that way from the factory. So we need to crack down. We're going to look to amend the state vehicle code to do that. And we also have some stings that go on during the summer months in the 42nd Ward and the 2nd Ward as well to try and cite motorcycle operators for illegal noise. The other thing we're working on is the sirens. The sirens in Chicago are louder than any other major city, almost twice as loud as New York. They don't need to be that loud. If you live near the hospital as we do, you hear it constantly. And it is actually a health risk. You can be walking down Michigan Avenue and you'll see people putting their hands over their ears because it hurts when the siren is aimed right at you. So we're working on some of those things. They're quality of life issues, but they're important to people. We actually get more calls about that from Streeterville than we do about any other issue.
Paul? Not me. Okay.
I didn't catch any fish in the fishing trip. So.
I thought that made him the mayor calling, but not. Okay. Last question. And you always got to leave them. Now, this is, by the way, normally I don't read a question unless the person signs their name. But this question has been typed. So this one, they're ready for you, sir. They're ready for you. Here it comes. I heard Terry Mazzani of Chicago Community Trust speak here a few weeks ago, and he referenced the potential merger between CPS Schools, Ogden, and Jenner. We all heard him. I believe Ogden is in your ward. Some say it's an important step in addressing inequities between these two schools, while at the same time resolving crowding at one school and under-enrollment at the other. Now, you said you wanted to be alderman. Here's the question. What do you think about this idea? Do you support such plan, and why or why not?
Okay. The answer is no. I don't support this plan, but I will support this plan if a majority of the Ogden parents want this plan. And that's what we're trying to ascertain. There's two schools involved in this. I've talked to Superintendent Claypool, and his position is the same. If this is what the Ogden parents truly want, we'll find a way to make this happen. One concern that I do have is the distance between Jenner and Ogden. You know, there's some challenges there. There's some logistical problems that would make this unworkable. Jenner isn't in my ward. Ogden is, so it wouldn't be up to me. One thing that is up to me, though, is to help Ogden in their expansion goals. If Ogden is overcrowded, it's actually right on the line of being overcrowded, and if we continue to see the type of growth in the neighborhood that we're hoping to have, it probably will eventually get to be overcrowded. But we have a $5 million allocation from a private developer that could be used to expand Ogden School. Ogden School was actually designed architecturally to have a floor or even two added to the roof. So we can expand up. We can build that school to have greater capacity, more classrooms, more teachers. Again, it would be up to CPS to find a way to hire and pay for those teachers, and that's a whole other set of challenges. But that is one potential option to overcrowding at Ogden, is to keep Ogden where it is and keep the Ogden families where they are and keep the children where they are, just to give them more classrooms, which is what they need. The proposal to merge with Jenner, it's very controversial. Some people really like it. Some people really dislike it. And we're still working through that, and we're going to see eventually what a majority of the Ogden parents, where they land. But for right now, that's my position. I would continue supporting the design work that we're doing right now, and we may possibly be able to get an expansion of Ogden School on the books.
Round of applause.
Thank you.
Well done. Hold it.